Good morning. I'd like to call today's meeting of the House Special Committee on Oil and Gas to order. Today is April 17th, and this meeting is called to order at approximately 8:33 a.m. We are on teleconference today and are connected with LIOs in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Kenai. I believe that Matt Sue is also on, and we're connected with off-net lines, I guess, in Wasilla and Nikiski. On today's calendar, we'll hear testimony from invited members of the public to testify on the enforcement standards of the Department of Environmental Conservation. And I would like to say that it's my intention as chairman of this committee, and talking with other legislators throughout this building, they concur that there seems to be a PR problem with the Department of Environmental Conservation and the public, and that PR problem seems to emanate from how they enforce the standards, not the standards themselves. And so I would like to make sure that everybody understands that's listening and that it is present, that our function this morning is to try to help the DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, with their PR problem. And we will do that by suggesting ways of making them more user-friendly, as I suggested earlier, without changing the standards that they are there to enforce. Just a little bit of backup, I introduced House Bill 171, which we will not be talking about today. House Bill 171 was an instrument to set forward this meeting based on trying to get the DEC and other units of the government of the state of Alaska more user-friendly to the folks that they should be serving, and that's the citizens of the state of Alaska. I'd like to note that Alaska faces the challenge of protecting its high-quality environment while finding the best possible way to encourage and support new development. By creating a user-friendly department, we can protect our precious environment while encouraging responsible development in order to maintain a healthy statewide economy. And I think that is paramount, that we do create jobs and that we become, as Governor Knowles has said, more user-friendly and with a door open to business in the state of Alaska. And with that, we have several people that would like to testify, and this has been on an invited testimony. I would like to bring out some of the good things that has happened with the Department of Environmental Conservation and how they've enforced standards so that we can build upon those. And I will be relating a project that has come forward that demonstrates that. And that's the kind of thing that we like to see government do, working with business, working with industry to make sure our environment is safeguarded, yet allowing the necessary jobs that we need to go forward. We have a individual in Matt Sue, and he has a time constraint that he must leave at 9 a.m. So I would ask if Mr. Bill Devon is on line from Matt Sue. Mr. Devon?
Good morning. This is William Devon, Bill Devon. And I was contacted by Mr. Hodgins to office to speak today pertaining to a background of abuse of citizens by the Wasilla office. There was a hearing in 1984 called by Ron Larson concerning the same thing, and nothing came of that. That was Representative Larson. In 1992, I had to finally get a hearing with Sven Erickson to settle the issue of getting a permit for my business, and that's of record. In 1994, because of a petition started at the local bar, Cache Creek Lodge, and signed by persons having no firsthand knowledge of anything, DEC decided to have a full-blown investigation of the Cache Creek Chevron property. Without notifying the owner, Sam Devon, nor the operator of record, Corrine Foster, that a complaint had been filed, the process was begun. DEC Mike Kreiber did interview several residents, but acquired no sworn statements, leaving the interviews a matter of hearsay. And as subsequent excavation proved out, there were no PCBs, buried cars, no large area of contamination, as was perpetrated. What we did find was three buried car parts, two tires, and a few oil cans and a 5-gallon can that had some diesel in it and had spilled, requiring a cleanup. At the direction of Mr. Earl Thoreau, the operator at the time, Mr. Steve Strong had buried the debris, which was amounted to about 1 cubic yard. 10 yards of contaminated soil was found and removed for bioremediation and is currently being treated. We were required by DEC to do emergency water tests on three locations, Cache Creek Lodge, Petrakatch, and Cache Creek Chevrons. These tests came back clean, but cost us $2,000. None of the statements acquired by Mr. Kreiber were true, as tests have proved out, but without sworn statements, they are hearsay and not evidence that would be usable in by the courts if a suit were to be filed by us. The entire incident was concocted by Mr. Bob Watkins and Gator Hutchison as a personal attack on me because of personal disagreements over section line easement use. Mr. Watkins contacted the governor's office, Representative Bev Masick, Lida Green, Commissioner of DEC, the local paper, The Frontiersman, and the DEC Wasilla, and they took the bait and were hounded by Mr. Watkins to take action. If DEC would even have had the courtesy to contact anyone connected from my family, this entire incident could have been avoided. My name has been maligned in the paper, and my entire family has been put through a very costly and traumatic experience that should never have occurred. I will not deny that I have had trouble with Mr. Paul Pinard, DEC Wasilla, but I am only one on a long list. His insensitive, inconsistent behavior has no place in public service. Many people would speak out but are afraid of the consequences because of the authority Mr. Pinard has over their livelihood. Commissioner Brown has a copy of my file and testimony of other Alaskans that has had similar treatment. If any of you want to contact me, feel free to do so. My phone number is 733-2544. I've been in Alaska 70 years. Mr. Pinard's abuse of physician goes back to at least 1984. His staff is very intimidated by him. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Devin. We have with us on the committee, we have Representative Kemplin and Representative Ryan. Any questions of Mr. Devon from committee members? I have one, Mr. Devon. Have you seen where different standards are, or where the same standard is applied differently to different folks?
Oh, yes. I'll give you a good instance. In 1992, when I was brought into under Mr. Pinard's thumb again, we had to update our sewer system. The only correction that we had to make was move a water line 10 feet and change the design of our waste, our dump station. But in the process, he required me to put in a lint trap in the sewer line from the washing machines. I am the second person in the state to be required to do this. Now, what do you think that is? We had to prove by physically testing the entire system that we had adequate water, adequate sewer, and we did this by not by engineering, but by actual water test. We were going to be required to put in a 5-horsepower pump. The pump we had delivered 50 gallons of water per minute for 36 hours. And that water went into the sewer, and that dissipated. There was nothing wrong with our sewer system, but we had to dig up everything to show that ours was okay. Now, I think that's a standard above and beyond what DEC should be doing. The system has been there for 15 years, has never failed, has never caused a problem, and I defy DEC to stand up to that record.
Thank you, Mr. Devon. I have one other question, and that would be concerning the incident, the original incident where the diesel was spilled. Do you feel that had their enforcement standards been a little bit different, that there would have been a lot less to do? Or do you feel that
we didn't know that there had been some buried debris? The operator that buried it didn't tell anybody. When we got the property back, this incident started, and it was because of a personal thing. So if we'd have known, we'd have dug it up, took care of it. But it went to the media. You probably read of it in the paper. Cache Creek Chevron is polluting the whole area is the cause of cancer in the valley. I mean, this got so far out of hand that my wife, Pertner, had to go to the hospital. You know, I don't think we deserve that kind of treatment.
Representative Ryan, you have a question? Mr. Devon?
Good morning, sir. During this process of DEC, did they ever try to find out who was basically responsible for any contamination, or did they just tell you that you had the responsibility because you had the property?
You got it.
Okay.
And what happened there? They said, well, no, that operator isn't here anymore. You have the property. You clean it up.
Okay.
Well, we had already removed tanks, and we got maligned for that by DEC because they said, well, we paid off the consultant. Well, I don't think these consultants can stay in business if I bribe them. We paid them a sizable amount of money to take care of the tank cleanup, and that came out of pocket.
Were you ever told by DEC that if you didn't do what was required, they would use 470 money to do it and then bill you?
Oh, yeah. You bet. If we didn't do the water test, I don't know what the 470 money is, but if we didn't do the emergency water test and nobody had a report of anything wrong with the water, it was almost a laughing joke in our community of why we were doing this. But there's a group that is whatever. Yes, we were told that if we didn't do it, they would undertake the program. We voluntarily did everything. And it's been in excess of $25,000 to clean up 10 yards of dirt that got put in the ground by another operator. If that's the intent of our government, I think there's something wrong.
Okay. Further question from that, Mr. Chairman.
Please go ahead, Representative Ryan.
Did anybody go or make any effort on the State Department of Environmental Conservation to find out who this other person who actually was responsible for the contamination, to find that person, do anything about making them responsible?
Nope. I have a letter in the file to Michelle Brown from that gentleman that sent a letter to DEC telling them that he would answer any questions that they had. But to my knowledge, he was never contacted, because I contacted the man myself. I've went to everyone that was on the list of witnesses as to these things that has happened. And some of the people weren't even in the state when these things were proposed to have happened. I've got a file about an inch thick. Like I say, Michelle Brown has a complete copy of this. If you want a copy, glad to send it. I'm not the only one that has made stay. I could read the letter that this person that did the burial, and it's from Earl Thoreau. And it is, I've been contacted by Bill Devon regarding your department's investigation of the above-referenced site for possible contamination. I was involved in ownership of this property at one time, and if you require any information which I can provide, please feel free to contact me in person or by mail. Signed, Earl Thoreau. The because they had created the problem without our knowledge. We ended up having to clean it. And I don't have a problem with that part. It's the manner in which, and the very heavy-handed way in which they dealt with us. You're in violation. If you don't respond to this, you're going to have legal action taken against you. And as it's proved out, there was such a little bit of contamination that there's probably more in your backyard than there was here.
Further questions, Representative Ryan?
No, thank you.
Representative Kemplin?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Devin, did DEC provide you with any sort of timeline as to...
Oh, yeah, real short. Do it by tomorrow or you're in trouble, just like with the water tests. We had to use the emergency measures to send the stuff out, which doubled the cost of all the water tests, and they all came back clean. The only one that didn't come back clean was the well that was inactive, and there's an evidence of lead in the well, which is caused by the leaching of the pump. The solder in the pump contaminates all wells that they set for a long time. And that was the findings of the environmental management team that came up and did it. So that will clean up when you use the well. We haven't used it for 3 years, so but it wasn't a health hazard to any of the public use wells.
Further questions, Representative Kemplin?
Yes. So there was if I understand correctly, then the department's looked at this as being something that was a high risk.
Oh, major health hazard. If you read the Frontiersman about a year and a half ago, it hit the pages, man. Pictures, the whole nine yards. Bev Massick came up and looked at the property, you know, drove by. She didn't go on and test anything. But there was a lot of pressure put on a lot of people by individuals to make sure that we sweat. And they took the bait, and unfortunately we paid the price.
And then once the analysis was done, the risk was actually determined to be what?
Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
There was no risk. It was stated in the complaint that we had dumped hundreds of gallons of transformer oil with PCBs down the drain. All of that oil, there was a truck wreck up on the Chilitna Bridge. The DOT asked us to clean it up. We took the oil to Anchorage to the hazardous waste site. We reclaimed the copper. But these statements were libelous and slanderous. But there's nothing in writing. And if DEC is going to come out and get witnesses, they better get some sworn testimony. When they start maligning people in the newspaper and taking them to task. I have no recourse.
Mr. Devin, I have one question, and then we'll get back to Representative Kemplin. Part of the process of this hearing is to try to find out from people that have been affected by the Department of Environmental Conservation to come forward with recommendations as to how they think the department could operate a little bit more user-friendly with the public. And drawing on your experience, if you could maybe think of some of those recommendations from your standpoint that would help government become more responsive to the folks.
I spent an hour and a half with Michelle Brown a year and a half ago and gave her recommendations. And some of them have been instituted. But there has to be an attitude change at the office level that they are there to help us, not to hinder us, not to make it as difficult as possible to complete a job, to stay in business.
Then in your estimation, if I might continue just for a second, the standards that they were enforcing were probably acceptable? It was the way that they enforced them?
I don't think that the standard for the lint trap in my laundromat was acceptable. I had no choice.
Okay. How about on the cleanup of the debris?
I had no problem with, if they found contamination on my site, then I'll clean it up. You know, that's just the way the ball bounces. But the manner in which they initiated the investigation without ever contacting myself, I'm not even an owner. I'm buying it back from my son because he can't afford to pay the bills on this.
Thank you very much. Representative Kemplin, you had a further question?
Yes. First, a comment. It certainly seems that it would help if they had a more customer service type of attitude, where the public are their customers, and they're there to make sure that the customers are satisfied. But a question here regarding DEC. Did DEC reimburse you for your expenses when it was determined that there was no cause for the emergency situation?
You got to be kidding.
Mm-hmm.
We have paid all the bills.
Further questions of Mr. Devin?
No.
If you have a quick summation, I would certainly appreciate your quick wrap-up. And I would also thank you very much for being involved with our hearing this morning. We have one additional question from Representative Ryan.
Yes, sir. Has it been determined who the person that worked for the government agency, who in fact was responsible of going to the press and releasing this information without notifying you first?
I have no idea. Whether it was done by the DEC, or whether it was done by the individual that initiated the petition, when the government picked up on the complaint without doing some investigation and I've got a stack of letters here of people saying, I never witnessed anything, yet they were declared as being witnesses. They never contacted the individuals. I've got a release letter from at least six that said that they weren't even in the country when they were supposed to have seen this happen. You know, and we found that they claimed we buried seven cars in this new drainage system. Well, we dug up the entire site to the satisfaction of Mike Kreiber. He ended up tearing up my sewer line and found nothing.
Thank you. Further questions, Representative Ryan?
No, thank you.
Mr. Devin, I do appreciate your participation this morning.
I have one comment to make.
Please do so.
And that is that by my coming here today, I have put myself in jeopardy from the Wasilla office again. And if you hear from me again, you'll know why.
I will guarantee.
Very vindictive office. If you cross Mr. Bernard's mandates, you're in deep doo-doo. The engineer that did my work pretty near lost his license because he laid it on the line to him that our site was clean. We had in excess of requirements for a leaching system, and I was even chastised for that by the statement, well, why would you build a big one bigger than you needed? Well, I've never had a sewer system fail in 40 years of installing. I hope you folks can, I attended another hearing this year, not with DEC, but concerning a mining issue, and the same attitude prevailed. I don't know whether the gentleman cares to speak to you today, but he's sitting right here, the person that had the hearing. It was a zoo. Brett Huber, administrative assistant for Lida Green at the time, attended the meeting, and it was bad.
I thank you very much, Mr. Devin, for your testimony this morning, and I will guarantee you that as chairman of this committee, if you run into any incident of retribution, that I have enough colleagues within this building that have been trying to do what this committee is going to do, as far as making DEC more user-friendly. And you will contact my office or me or your legislator, and we will get involved in an impartial basis to make sure that the standards are met and it's the enforcement that is under control. With that, I'd like to also mention that the enforcement of some of the standards, there are times when there is a necessity for what I would call a heavy hand or a more stricter interpretation, and that would be due to a recidivist, somebody that is constantly polluting, or somebody that is just flat obstinate about cleanup. And it is not our intentions to try to hamstring the Department of Environmental Conservation when we do have cases that we do need to be a little bit more aggressive. But it is my quest as a legislator and as the chairman of this committee to make certain that DEC reevaluates their attitude and does indeed become more user-friendly in enforcing the standards that we have compelled them to enforce. With that,
could I interrupt just a second?
Yes, sir.
We still haven't had a release of by DEC of the ground. The statement they made was there's no further action necessary. And that just leaves the door wide open for them to come around tomorrow and say, well, we better dig over here.
It's my intentions, Mr. Devin, to continue this committee hearings through the interim as needed.
Thank you.
And there are two things that we have been charged with. One is building the Trans-Alaska gas line. And then as chairman, I'm charging this committee with making certain that we come up with a solution for becoming more user-friendly by various departments of the government. And we have decided that DEC is the first unit of government that we're going to concentrate on.
Just a quick comment. I dealt with the DEC in Fairbanks for about 12 years. Had no problem. They worked with you. It was user-friendly. I came to the Wasilla office, and it was like black and white. And there's no excuse for it other than that the local office has got you by the throat. And if you don't go exactly to their letter, why, you're in deep trouble. You can't be a free American anymore and deal with that office.
I appreciate that statement that there are very caring and people that are within the department that are very interested in cleanup and working with the public. And I have heard that there are various areas of the state that the departments are run probably a little bit more user-friendly, and I would like to use them as models for the areas of the state that maybe are not. With that, I would like to... do we have anybody else with a time constraint? Okay. With that, I have a Virgil Norton who is present, and he will be talking about McGann Water System. If you would identify yourself and...
Sir, my name is Virgil Norton, and I was asked at the last minute to speak for the McGann Water System and address concerns that Merrill McGann specifically has with the system. I came across the information that I'm going to provide the committee. I'm a project manager for the River Terrace site in Soldotna, where an old dry cleaners in the 60s, there was some tetrachloroethylene contamination, TCE, or PCE, and I was looking for a site or a comparable site in Alaska where I could do some comparisons as far as what remediation standards would be expected down the road and some of what site assessment had been done in other sites. Well, this chemical hasn't been, it's not like diesel or gasoline, of course, and so the only other known one was on Kodiak, and I came across the information about the Nikiski site, and I went to Hart Krauser and got from them, after getting permission from Mr. McGann, the Hart Krauser report, which essentially is, I wouldn't call it a final report because they recommended doing further work in the Nikiski area, But the report itself deals with, in a lot of, almost from cover to cover, with what I found, too, and I know that the gentleman that I work for finds it somewhat of a double standard. For an example, the department used state lab for testing at the McGann site, which I suppose is okay, instead of an independent laboratory. Now, when I'm saying, you have to understand, in the Nikiski situation, the McGann water well, the third-party situation, the state moved in and took lead, so it was a state lead project, and they hired this outfit, Hart Krauser, which is a reputable engineering firm, to go into the field and work at their direction. And in the Hart Krauser report, they're very careful, and it's cover to cover where they're covering their own services and qualifying a lot of the data that they provided. I won't go through all the numerous areas where they say our services were provided as requested and as directed by the ADEC field representative on site, and other areas where they're talking about limited data gathered, etc. In other words, this site assessment here compared to the one that we did at River Terrace is far inferior. And of course, the client that I work for found it as a double standard. In other words, an assessment can be done by the department. For an example, 16 holes were drilled at Nikiski. We drilled 55 on our own on the Kenai River, test holes.
Mr. Norton, can I ask you a question at this juncture?
Yes.
Do you, the McGann Water System project that you were talking about was several years ago. Is it possible that the DEC has changed policy or regulation since that time that would include maybe more testing? Or,
well, I would recommend that further testing be done. Hart Krauser, I believe, they've told me that they recommended in 1989 in their report that further testing be done. They recommended that the source for TCE in that area has always been, and this report alleges that it may have been the old laundromat. But they qualify that on the information that they weren't allowed to drill in areas or to go into areas where they thought the source might actually have originated. Now, they didn't find the source for 111 trichloroethylene, which is a metal polisher degreaser, there was no source found for that. And the old laundromat has serious questions as to whether or not they actually ever got into the dry cleaning business. The guy pleaded guilty, paid a $2,000 fine, and left the state. And he did overrun, apparently, some witnesses in the area. He did conduct some careless laundry operations, but there's serious question as to whether he actually had any tetrachloroethylene or trichloroethylene product at all. And the trichloroethylene was not traceable to that site. So there is a fire station across the street, and I've been told, and after looking at the data that's provided in the report from Hart Krauser, I would say that since both chemicals have been reported to have been used by the fire company, and that is also owned by the McGann family, this property is at least $1 a year or something like that to the state, the borough. The contamination could have resulted from the fire station property, and that property has not been tested as the source of the tetrachloroethylene or PCE. The other areas of the report, and far as standards, the standards of the time, for an example, all of the analytical that is in this report, every single sample exceeded the 14-day holding time and was frozen, and both void your TCE 8-10 testing. So your salt. So essentially, had I done a similar situation at River Terrace, it would have avoided $100,000 plus worth of work. It would have made it meaningless. to exceed those holding times in every single sample.
And to your knowledge, the question that I asked, you wouldn't know if there was a change in regulations from the time that the McGann water system problem occurred till the River Terrace problem?
I believe there has been some regulation change, but it's my as far as the actual analytical requirements, the testing for TCE, et cetera, this is all chemistry, and it should have been state-of-the-art at the time as well as today if they proposed it, so they used a correct test in 8010. But as far as their regulations as to how many holes to drill or whatever, we chose to do a grid. I did at this specific site, and I did so to eliminate their any potential of somebody coming back and saying, well, you didn't look over there, and simply having to remobilize and go into the field and spend more money. In other words, I encouraged my client. I said, look, spend a lot of money up front and show them exactly what's out here and don't leave any stone unturned. That's the way you have to go about it in order to.
And your recommendation was to delineate the area that was affected right from the start?
Yes, thoroughly. In the situation of the Nikiski site, I don't believe that they have come close to finding the source of either the PCE or the 111 TCA. And the source would be a major concern. There's 300 to 400 properties out there, 350 to 400 properties. These people are having trouble selling their homes, getting financing. It's impacted that area and a lot of people, and there's probably 10 to 15,000 people that have drank this water, which now is, I understand, safe because it's run through carbon filters, but the water company there suffered a great deal of financial harm. So the source of where this contamination came from is a very important. They've had some relief in a situation where the state has given them some money to do the carbon filters for their water system, I understand, but that certainly, they lost several of their major customers. Over this situation, they lost the high school, and they lost the high school as a customer. They lost the cannery. But throughout this report, in other words, it's due to the limited number of monitoring wells due to this or due to without knowledge of the plume's geometry, monitoring data, it's just replete with unknowns. In other words, this report here and not having, my question is why does the department intend to go back and take another serious look in this area? In other words, this, if this were the somebody in the general public, I guarantee you I don't believe they would have ever left. But if the source is that fire station, and you understand, I'm not saying that it is, but there's every indication that it's not what's in this report. And this company, by the way, recommended that they go back and do additional testing. So there are a lot of question marks there as to what, and user-friendly attitude regarding DEC. It's an attitude that would be part of the professionalism of being able to go out as a chemist or an engineer in the field and do a proper site assessment and actually direct an unbiased search for a contaminant, not in any vendetta type of situation, which is in some cases I think in the state occurred, but to go out and do a real scientific and address the real science and the real engineering and the reality of the situation. And this Nikiski situation, I think, does need some serious attention. It needs, there are a lot of people out there having a lot of difficulty, and it even states in the report that the separate source of the TCA, the more probable cause is, and this is me talking now, I believe that they're probably the mutually same source, TC and TCA.
You talked earlier about the carbon filters and that being acceptable. Is that acceptable from a DEC standpoint or a release from them?
but if a carbon filter...
Well, I haven't looked at the McGann system, and TCE is the type of chemical that, of course, it actually is the simple remediation to it. If it gets oxygen, it wants to take off, and I'm not a chemist, but that's widely known in the environmental industry. It wants to get away. If you can give it oxygen, it'll get away. So in the McGann system, I haven't looked at it, but I understand that the water may be fell in a certain way, that if the oxygen is actually taking away the TCE instead of the filters, but in a tank situation, but and that may be the case, but the water is safe today. But the situation of the contamination in the area has caused the water company to suffer a great deal of damage. In other words, if for a high priority situation, where I DEC official myself, I would have really zeroed in. I'd have still been out there looking for the source of this contamination, because it's impacted. We're not talking about birds here. We're talking about people.
It's my understanding that the homes in that area are not financeable because of the water problem. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. It's led to a situation where now I think the DEC has some concern over, and I'm not up to speed on this, but I was told by Merrill McGann that they have some concerns over that his water system was put in by his father, and it doesn't have certain engineered stamps, etc., attached, and apparently they want him to dig it up and redo it. I don't know the ins and outs of, you know, this. It's 6-inch pipe, and you're looking at $21 a foot, and you're probably talking $365,000 to do all that. That's a figure that Merrill gave me.
Mm-hmm. Any questions of Mr. Norton from the committee?
Perhaps, Mr. Chairman. Mr.
Please, Representative Ryan.
Mr. Norton, in dealings, I may have missed it, but in dealings with DEC personnel, do you feel that they acted in a professional service, as government is supposed to do, provide a service-like manner, or did you find some arbitrary and capricious demands by the agency and threats of bullying tactics if you didn't do what you were told you were going to be made to do it? And I've heard this different responses many times, and I'm just wondering what your experience was.
My experience, and this is not on the McGann site, because I wasn't involved in this McGann site, but at the site where I'm project manager, the DEC could use a lot of work in the user-friendly, and I would refer back to what Representative Hodgins said about, I think it comes down to attitude. In other words, there's going to be a time when the agency has to be tough, and they're going to have to deal with somebody that's going to be obstinate or refuse to clean up or intentional pollution or attempting to evade the law. But to be user-friendly to the public, a great deal of work could be done with the department, and it goes even beyond addressing. First thing is to address attitude to the public, to make the public more comfortable that they're going to be dealing with representatives from the department who are, A, qualified to make the judgment calls that they're making when they're talking about contamination on a property, that they have the educational credentials. I'm not a chemist. I didn't come here this morning advertising that I was. I qualified my statements, etc. A lot of situations that would involve chemistry or engineering where you're going to make judgment calls that would cost a homeowner or a business owner many thousands or even up into the millions of dollars. I don't think the state should ever move on state lead situations unless that has really been looked at by people who can make a determination, is this property truly putting the public at risk? Is this, in other words, there has to be some criteria measurement put in there that would affect what the chemical is, what the situation is, how old is it, what amount are we talking about, the difference between a gallon of gas and a tanker truck. Where the DEC, another thing too that I think that the House and Senate could address perhaps next session is to look real hard at looking at a way to put the, and I'm talking about the contaminated sites division of DEC under more of a third party situation, to where you've got some checks and balances in there, because when they're in a position to go out with blanket authority and protect the public, and then you've got an environmental company coming along who finds the poor soul that has a problem, and this person didn't make the problem, they bought the problem when they bought the property. What you do there is put together a situation, and there are a lot of these environmental companies, let me qualify this, who are very thorough, they're responsible, they've got excellent credentials, and they're fair. None of them are cheap, but you've got some rip-off environmental companies too. In other words, they're going to come out there and get into this poor soul's pocket big time, and by the time he realizes they've taken him, led him down the primrose path, he spent such a significant amount of his money that now he probably can solve his problem. And so the DEC, in other words, when they hook up with contaminated sites, let me qualify that, that's contaminated sites, I don't want to say DEC, only the contaminated sites division. When these people hook up with DEC, you've got a marriage made in heaven. The DEC wants to protect the environment for the people of Alaska. That's what they're charged to do. And if you've got people there that aren't looking hard at this company, in other words, and this company can run amok and do excessive testing, can do, in other words, they can make it terribly expensive. A problem could cost a person $100,000, and that same identical problem could cost the next individual $1 million, same identical situation, amount of whatever. And it would depend on the companies, who found them, who's running the site for the contaminated sites. And I just don't see a check and a balance there. I don't see one group watching another. I didn't come here prepared to offer the committee or the legislature a solution to that. It'd require a lot of work, but I think the players are out there. There's enough in reputable people in the environmental business that I think that could be addressed to where a person, for an example, could know that they aren't being picked on by DEC. In other words, some if they hire an environmental company and that environmental company is going to cost $150,000 or $250,000 or whatever, there would be some way of assurance that, A, they're getting their money's worth. That's got to be done. That's a fair situation. And also from the environmental side, in other words, is that situation severe enough to warrant that? And the big thing, I think, with the general public is especially true with, I think, everybody that's come in contact with contaminated sites. The big thing that hurts people right up front, most of them are business people or homeowners, and they don't know what to do. They don't really, they've never encountered anything like this before, so they're in total ignorance. So they're going to believe or grasp at whatever straw, or be led off in whatever direction whoever's got the strongest arm will pull them. And any information that can be very clearly explained to them, and I think the DEC would become very user-friendly if, first of all, they could explain, look, sir, you have this problem here, and the best way for you to address this is, and here's your step 1 through 10 or whatever procedure, and here's some recommended sources of help for you, and give them a list of 25 approved companies or whatever that could help them, that where there can be some constraints put on what's done and what's really, really required. It's complicated situation to address. It's not going to be done in a day, but all of this didn't come to be in a day either. So
there was a question, if I might. My office has had some complaints, and there was some testimony this morning that no matter what action seemed to be taken by the people involved in these various problems that they have, they never seem to get anything resolved. The agency never comes and says, okay, you finally completed this. Like, we just had a testimony from the fellow that said that he hasn't had a release on his property yet. In your experience, have you had this indecisive attitude from DEC, or have they come and said you have done this sort of things and now finally you're free, go sin no more? What is your experience?
Well, Representative Ryan, and this is with all due respect to all government employees, it's somewhat a given, and I guess the nature of the business, that a lot of people that in government jobs aren't what you'd call risk takers. In other words, the early part of my life, I was a construction foreman, superintendent for some of the bigger companies, and every day I went to work, I had my job on the line. I had production, I had to get from point A to point B, and if I couldn't do it that day, there was another guy at the gate waiting to take my job, and I lived in that environment, grew up in it, but so I had to make judgment calls from the early morning until the end of the day, every single day. I'm there, and not just me, but there, you yourself, and you, I know both of you gentlemen have done this in business where you have to make judgment calls every day to where your reputation or whatever is on the line. And to get that out of a system of government, in this situation, it's critical, because you've got to have somebody, and that's why I prefaced my remarks early with educational standards of the people that are going to be doing it, and their training and their attitude, because, see, they have to be able to say, look, this chemical is this, and it does that, and I'm qualified to say this, and you're done, or whatever. They've got to have that at some level in the DEC, and they can't be all trying to push it over here, push it. You know, you've got to have somebody step forward and say, and give you the specifics of what's got to be done. And the only way, when you're talking about this environmental, and I'm new to this, this is my first rodeo, but I can tell you that from what I've learned about it since November of last year, it's a complex situation and a complex business. You're dealing in engineering and chemistry. It's certainly nothing, you know, if I can come to grips with it, it's not beyond the average person. But at the same time, putting standards in this industry that are doable, and that there you get, you'll find a lot of DEC regulations, for an example, are they doable? Can you attain this goal? And you're going to have people that understand flexibility. I'm not talking about, oh, well, that's good enough stuff. In other words, when more could be done. For an example, we were required on the site that I'm on at River Terrace to do 8260 analytical. Now, the cost between 8260 and an 8010 is like five times the cost. The reason you would run an 8260 is situations where you're looking for TPH, hydrocarbons, benzene, etc. We were looking primarily for PCE or TCE, tetrachloroethylene, the same stuff we've got here at McGann. And so an 8010 test, which I managed to go negotiate a deal to where we got them for like $60 analytical, and that saved my client an enormous amount of money, you know, when you're going from $500 to $60. Now, so we did do some full spectrum tests. Yes, we did for our own, and DEC did require us to do a few. We did some on our own because we were, you know, intentionally looking to see if we had any TPH or whatever.
Mr. Norton, we do have two other folks that I'd like to get on before 10 o'clock, and we will be carrying this meeting over to another time. And I do appreciate very much your insight and testimony. And I would ask, as the people that are listening, I would still encourage more participation by written comment, because it's obvious we will be carrying this hearing over on positive things that the DEC has done that we can constructively build on, and then areas of concern that citizens would have. And unless
Representative Ryan, you have a question of Mr. Norton. I would like to move on. Thank you, Mr. Norton. I appreciate that very much. Next, we'll go to Robert Bannon in Anchorage, and then right after that, we'll go to Bill Schaffester from Marine Petroleum in Anchorage. Mr. Bannon, are you available?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please state your name, and let's get into your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Robert P. Bannon, and I'm with Sherway Incineration, a firm who sold out the as of January 1 this year. So I feel free enough to talk with you folks, and I'd like to first make a comment that I agree with the earlier gentleman. I would not be testifying here today if I still had information working with the DEC, because I've found certain individuals there very much to have retribution on their mind. But putting that aside, I realize that that comment is only made about certain individuals and not at all about the majority of the DEC. I'd like to start by somehow qualifying myself as not being a nut. That might be an overly large project, but I'd like people to understand that I have worked for many years with other agencies successfully, and I do understand about permitting. I myself have 8 individual Corps of Engineer permits that I've obtained for wetland development in the Anchorage area, and those are fairly difficult things to come by. I have a background of having started a title company that required working with the state's recording office to an extensive amount. We've always found those folks to be very, very helpful. And we're proud at Sherway that we've worked with the following people. I'd like to name some of our professional engineers and whatnot who are helping us, so that you can understand that we were working with the type of people that typically oil companies and whatnot might deal with. We work with CH2M Hill on air quality matters and permitting. We work with Shannon and Wilson on environmental assessment and soils testing. Mr. Harry Udy, a PE, on environmental assessment. Mr. Calvin Bruner, PE, a gentleman who's written 7 books on incineration, and AMTEST for air quality tests from our STRAC emissions. And I don't know if this is sworn testimony or not, but I am willing to swear under penalty of perjury the following statements are true and complete to the best of my knowledge.
We are not requiring that sworn statement at this point, but do feel free to continue.
Okay. I've submitted my information in writing, and I hope that the members of the committee have had a chance to, or will take the opportunity to look at it. A brief overview might be appropriate. I was a minor stockholder in a small business, local business, Sherway Incineration. About 8% of our business stream consists of oil spill up waste, oil spill cleanup. We are familiar with that waste stream because we had 3 incinerators on the Exxon spill in Valdez. After we did business for some years, the department wrote a regulation, and we were told by the department that regulation required that we get a permit from them. We did obtain that permit from them. After several years and other permits, the department later acknowledged that we did not, in fact, require a permit from them to operate. At that time, we switched from a DEC permit to a Municipality of Anchorage permit. And I think this is a critical matter for everybody to understand. The municipal permit we got was tougher. It required performance standards to specific standards. In all regulations, in all ways, they were higher and more exacting than that required by the DEC. The enforcement was significantly more conscientious. The reporting requirements, the operating parameters, the training that we required was more exacting. We were required to have periodic public hearings and open housings to answer any questions that may arise, more than with the DEC. And we did well under the municipal system. The individuals who permitted us were knowledgeable. They listened to our engineers. They were uniformly polite. They responded to us in writing, typically within a week. And our time involved with a municipal permit, which protected and informed the public to a higher level than the DEC permit. Our time there was less than 1/10 of the time that we spent when we were involved with the DEC. I would advise anybody desiring an Alaska DEC permit that the treatment that they will receive may be completely arbitrary, depending upon whichever individual processes their project and which office handles it geographically within the state. Further, I advise that the director of at least the Anchorage office apparently does not have any meaningful oversight over problem employees. Their billing process is a shambles, and that in our repeated experience, the testimony of the department at public hearings was not true and, in fact, misleading on key items of critical importance to small business. But I do not mean to imply that other offices are run in that manner or that the department does not have a large group of dedicated people. I would be remiss if I did not favorably mention the previous Anchorage director, Janice Adair, Mr. John Stone and Kurt Fredrickson of Juneau, Mr. Al Bone of Anchorage, the attorney assigned to the AG's office, Mr. Leroy Latta, and Simon Mawson and Priscilla Wool of the Anchorage office who were assigned to our task. Part of the problem that we had was that there was an attitudinal problem with different individuals, and that really seems to be the crux of the matter. Our problem was, in essence, that each of the last two directors, the current one is of Anchorage, the current one is Mary Ann C., and the prior one was Janice Adair, each of them named an individual within the DEC to have oversight of our project and try to cooperate and coordinate everything with us and bring the matter to a close. And those two people, who are Simon Mawson, who's a PE, and Priscilla Wall, each of them had a very good open door policy and worked with us very carefully and tried very much to get cooperation within the department. But we were amazed to see that the other individuals within the department would not necessarily cooperate with them at all. Our file would be lost for ages. One individual would not hand over a file that we had requested. Even when we requested it under Freedom of Information Act, she did not make the information available to us. We found this pretty appalling. I don't know what to say. But let's look at some specific incidences. I have on my item, Mike, that I submitted a thing called Incident 5. I think this shows an attitude. We had our stack emissions tested at significant expense by AmTest. That's a professional outfit which does about 80% of this air testing work in Alaska. The individual performing our test was a professional engineer. He had a master's degree. He had done over 10,000 of these particular tests. He said he could form no opinion of how we were doing by visually inspecting the filters. Our local engineer had obtained his master's degree while working with that tester, and he agreed that he also could form no opinion from the filters. He would have to wait 30 days to get the lab results in. Our local DEC permit writer, Bill McClarence, returned to the office and placed a note in the file without telling us that said that he felt we were doing poorly from his observation of the filters, and he criticized our operation. We passed the various tests with flying colors, but his speculation remained in our file. Incident number 6, we entered into a compliance order to try and resolve our issues with the department. Among the details, it required us to answer the department letters within 10 days. It gave the department 60 days to answer. We were told by Mr. Bill Lamoureux that there would be some instances when they might take 60 days, but that would be unusual. We always answered within the 10-day limit. The department never answered within the 60-day requirement. The order said that if we had trouble resolving the issue, we should issue a specific appeal to a person in the department. When our engineer, Mr. Harry Udy, after numerous inquiries, did not receive an answer to his letter in 80 days, we called for such a meeting. After this meeting began, the individual we were appealing to, Mr. Lamoureux, excused himself and left the meeting. He did not return. We were left with Mr. Simon Mawson and the individual about whom we are complaining who had not answered the letter in 80 days, Ms. Eileen Olson. In this meeting, Eileen Olson said that she had received letters from our engineer, but she would not answer them because she felt he had not addressed all the questions that she had raised. Mr. Mawson obtained a promise from Olson. She would get a written response to us within 2 weeks. 5 months later, we had no response after checking repeatedly with Mawson. In that same meeting, Eileen Olson said she was going to take our engineer's work plan and compare it to information kept in our secret file. We had not heard of this secret file. We asked 3 times to see it. Olson refused. We asked if our engineer could review it. He refused. Our engineer, we pointed out, had been required to review all the files of the department in order to provide a work plan that would address all the issues. Eileen Olson assured us our engineer had not seen the secret file. We requested the file immediately under the Freedom of Information Act. 20 days afterwards, Eileen Olson provided us what she said was available to us from the secret file, a copy of a single page we had not seen before. It was from a disgruntled employee who is now a competitor. There were blackened out portions of the document. Eileen Olson told us if we wanted to know what was in the blackened out portions, we could get an attorney. This was not said in a helpful manner or trying to give us knowledge of how we could proceed. A year later, we found out the Attorney General's office had said we should have received the information in the file. And Simon Mawson felt strongly that we should receive the file. But the individual we were complaining about, Eileen Olson, had substituted her judgment and would only provide us one page. We know there was more because it was turned over to us over a year later by another person who was working with us in the department, and they're trying to comply with the Freedom of Information Act. We requested at least 6 times that Eileen Olson be taken off our case. She remained on our case until the end. After the appeal discussed above, where the supervisor Lamoureux left and failed to return, we elevated our appeal to the Anchorage director, Mary Ann C. We met with her and inquired first, why had Supervisor Lamoureux left the meeting and not returned? And second, why had Eileen Olson not answered any of our engineer's letters? By this time, the response Eileen Olson had promised us was long overdue. Our attorney was at the meeting, indicating very strongly that the department was in default on their agreement, and we were begging for assistance. Mary Ann C. said that she would provide us a written response within 5 days. She never responded. Our new competitor mentioned above went to the Palmer DEC office, got the Palmer DEC employee, showed him an incinerator with no test results, no permit, no data recording system, no hydraulic loading system, and got the Palmer DEC person to write a letter lauding the incinerator as state of the art. This was not available to us. We had far more than that. We were being criticized because our incinerator was deemed inadequate. After months of additional total lack of response in the Anchorage office, I contracted Kirk Fredrickson in Juneau. He was unaware of what was going on. He flew to Anchorage and met with us. He opened the meeting by asking what was the problem, and we pointed at 3 individuals in the room. And instead of one, Mary Ann C. said she would answer us in writing in 5 days. She has not answered in over 9 months. The supervisor, Lamoureux, we said, Bill Lamoureux has not answered us in over 10 months. The person handling our file, we said, Eileen Olson has not answered us in over 12 months. After the meeting, we were informed that the supervisor Lamoureux would not be involved in our project anymore, but the other individuals would. When the department tried to bill us for its time, we griped about a particular matter. And they produced records proving that Supervisor Lamoureux had spent a full work week revising a 4-page letter he had previously sent us that contained several errors. The 37 hours of effort did not produce a letter. That letter in progress was handed over to somebody else to continue to work on. The department agreed to knock off approximately $60,000 in time that had been charged to us. I think it is important for us to take a look at the overview and many of the samples and examples. There are many more than I've repeated here. I don't think at all that you can say that the Anchorage office has any different problems than anybody else. It's a matter of leadership at the top, and there are very nice people at the Anchorage office. There are also some complete turkeys. But I think a reasonable person would be very upset about this case history. This was a waste not only of our funds and time, but a tremendous misuse of the funds and the power and the other resources of the state of Alaska. Who is responsible for monitoring the time and the funds that they spent on our case? Why does it take 100% of a work week to revise a four-page letter? What happens when an employee decides that she won't provide information that's required by law under Freedom of Information Act? Who reports the Anchorage director when she does not answer for 9 months after promising a response? And why wasn't Juno made aware of these problems? So with that, I'll bid you fond adieu. It's not funny. It is broke. I would request that you do everything you can to try and fix the problems. There are a number of great folks, and we really enjoyed working with them. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Bannon, thank you very much for your testimony, and your written testimony was, I did read all of it. It is it's quite extensive, and I appreciate the time that you put in to get us this information. Are there any questions of Mr. Bannon at this time from committee members? What I would like to do is thank you very much for your participation in this, and I will give you some insight that I am a very tenacious person, and if there is nothing else that I do during my tenure in the legislature, I will try to make certain that state government is more user-friendly to the people of the state of Alaska, and I will assure you that I'm very tenacious, and I will take that as a very important project in my tenure down here.
I'll be happy to work with you.
Representative Ryan, you do have a question?
No, I wanted to kind of second what you had to say. I've received numerous testimonies. I've had personal experiences in the past, a long time ago, with the attitude of certain individuals from DEC. And whoever's running this slash up doesn't want to change the attitude of the employees, I will use every bit of power I have as a legislator to address those concerns in this department's budget, and I happen to be on their finance subcommittee budget. There seems to be the only way you get these people's attention is to do it through the budget. Talking to them is a waste of time. We are here as a government to serve the public, and if you don't like public service, I suggest you find another form of employment. Public service does not mean going out intimidating people, threatening people, using state resources to financially bankrupt them. You best have an attitude that you are here to help the public solve their problems. If you don't, I'm going to have an attitude that I want to make you go away. And I'd much rather have the EPA come in and let them solve the problem. So I'm putting the agency on notice. That's how I feel from the testimony I've heard today. And other testimonies or complaints I've received in my office, and they can do what they choose with it.
Thank you, Representative Ryan. I would like to, again, thank you, Mr. Bannon, and I would like to go to Mr. Bill Schaffester from Petro Marine in Anchorage. Are you there, Bill?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name for the record and your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bill Schaffester. I work for Petro Marine Services, fuel marketing and transportation company, Alaskan-owned, headquartered in Seward, Alaska. I appreciate being asked to testify at this hearing. No one can work as long as I have with an agency without having some stories to tell. My work with ADEC extends over 15 years and makes me a veteran of the enormous changes that resulted from the watershed Exxon Valdez spill. The relationship is long and varied, and the agency and I have both changed with time. We're certainly both fatter, but we're also both more experienced. I like to think that we're pondering the same problems and striving for acceptable solutions. I'd like to also say that we could probably both benefit from more exercise and diet. Anecdotes about problems symptomatic of large bureaucracies don't necessarily solve those problems. I have some stories, but would rather go directly to a message that I have. That message is mission and measurement. I believe that the frustrations recited are the result of more fundamental problems, not necessarily the cause of the problems. I'd like to give you my view of that cause. I think the agency needs better definition of mission and better measurement of its progress. Without mission and measurement, work gets lost in the processes. The processes become the missions. Activities often become the measure of progress and not results. The desired outcomes are lost for lack of focus. Contingency plans are an example of process overtaking purpose. As the process has evolved, standards keep changing. I've been struggling for several years to define the spill response planning standards for non-crewed tank barges. Contingency plan review has been hampered by the fact that we've been working without a clear understanding of how to meet the statutory standard. Plan review has been a difficult process. We're now in the midst of our first plan renewal for our tank barges. Since nothing has changed from the original plan, in other words, we have the same operation, the same barges, the same laws, and the same regulations, one might conclude that renewal would be an easy and quick matter. To the contrary, it's been going on for 8 months. I believe the reason is that neither the industry nor the agency clearly understands what should be done. The plan is measured against different standards every time it is reviewed. Without defined outcomes, the process cannot focus on results, so it grinds on. The review activity itself seems to become the measure of work. This is frustrating for the agency and for the industry. To our mutual credit, we have undertaken to resolve this problem. Janice Adair and I took a run at this about 3 years ago. Unfortunately, reorganization of DEC disrupted our efforts, but since then, Kirk Fredrickson has taken an active role to help solve this problem. He has supported our efforts to form a workshop with industry, ADEC, and the Coast Guard to develop realistic and effective prevention and response strategies. Tom Chappell and Steve Provant also deserve honorable mention for having been very helpful in their support. Just 2 weeks ago, we signed a formal partnering agreement whereby all three groups, that's the industry, DEC, and the Coast Guard, agreed to work together to define a clear strategy that we can all understand and accept as workable. I think this is a fine example of how we should confront these problems, and I have very high expectations for this model collaborative effort. We need to work hard to get beyond processes and start focusing on results. Too often, work is defined by activities when it should be defined by results. Everybody wants to do a good job, and everybody wants to be thought of as doing work important to the mission, but no one can do this unless the mission is clear and the work is measured. People want to see how their efforts contribute to the agency mission. Management must be focused on outcome. Processes must be judged by results, and results must be measured against goals. Mission and measurement. That's the mission, the message I'd like to leave with you. We'll all do a better job when we see the importance of our work measured against specific goals. But there must be a mission defined in terms of results that can be measured. What we want is fewer spills cleaned up quicker and not innumerable plans, each one getting thicker. That concludes my testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Schulfester. Representative Ryan, do you have any questions at this point?
No, sir.
I would like to add what I said earlier, that we understand that there's a lot of folks within the Department of Environmental Conservation that are very conscientious about what needs to be done, and I think a lot of them are are very user-friendly. We've certainly heard of folks this morning that have been named repeatedly that have been helpful, and I certainly encourage, very much encourage, future participation along those lines. Our committee will be looking at some of the areas that we need a lot of work in. We don't have any representation that's been presented yet by the Department of Environmental Conservation, and we will have that. We will have other folks that will come forward with suggestions, and I plan on working very closely with the commissioner, Michelle Brown, in making her department more user-friendly, and I believe that we can actually make them more efficient. Unfortunately, we have just a few minutes left, and we have some other folks that would like to speak, and unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get to them today. I will get with those folks and schedule another time. Mr. Schofester, I certainly appreciate very much your input, and I would hope that of the people that have testified this morning, that we can form some sort of working group to go forward and with recommendations and to look at the problem that we have before us and look at the solutions that have already been done by the Department of Environmental Conservation and to build on those. I know that there have been some very highly touted success stories with people working with the Department of Environmental Conservation, and those are the things we like to build on and we like to hear. And I would like to reiterate that our mission here is to make government user-friendly, and our mission will be we will concentrate with the Department of Environmental Conservation at this point, and I pledge to work with them to come up with the needed solutions. And in so doing so, I think we might be able to solve some budgetary problems, making them more efficient. It appears that the testimony this morning has been very broad-based as far as different problems, and I would hope that the Department of Environmental Conservation will take a realistic look at the testimony that was presented, both verbally and written. We have quite a packet of folks that have sent information in. There are people across the state that are listening in, and I would encourage them to participate in written form to my office, and you can send it to the Oil and Gas Committee, and that would be the State Capitol Building in Juneau. And we will take testimony, and I believe that we will carry this over for a few more meetings and see if we can't come up with a solution to this problem or this perceived problem. With that, I would like to, unless you have other Representative Ryan, you would have a further comment. I would like to hold this meeting over, and we will come up with a date that is suitable. It will probably not be during the remainder of this session, but will be during the interim, and it will probably be held in Anchorage. And with that, I would hold this meeting over till an unspecified time. And I thank all that have contributed and all that have participated.